For October the 15th, 2021, we talk about Metroid Dread, Back for Blood, and Mindustry. Welcome to Level 389. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Mysmith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Hi. Yeah. Fancy seeing you here. When did you get here?
usually there is somebody who's been away the longest, so I can like immediately jump to them. However, this is the same crew who was here last time. So I am paralyzed.
Time to play favorites, Cole.
does that mean you have to go first?
I think maybe it does. I don't have an awful lot of stuff happening. I've been watching some things. I've seen things. I watched this past week. I thought, the movie Malignant is about to leave HBO. And I had HBO, so I was like, I've got an evening here. I'm not feeling that great. I'll just watch a movie. And it was okay. it's something that I think was built up to a certain extent. Do you guys know what the movie Malignant is? Have you seen this? Have you heard about this?
James Wan horror movie off the rails?
Yes. Yeah.
Wait, so what is it?
It is a horror movie directed by James Wan. I know him as the director of the first Saw movie, like the creator of that series, although he went on and made The Conjuring. This is the first like original horror movie he's done since like The Conjuring started like 10 years ago or whatever. The way that I described it on Twitter was, what if Charlie Kaufman's twin from Adaptation wrote a horror movie after having a Stuart Gordon horror movie described to him at a bar.
I know literally not what any of that means.
It just adaptation. Yeah, there's too much to explain there.
Yeah. I was just talking about Academy Award nominated Donald Kaufman.
So. Yes.
is this like a monster movie?
Murder movie? Yeah, it's like a horror movie. It's this woman who has visions of people dying. It turns out it's the people she sees die actually die. And the things that I heard people say was like, it knows exactly what it's doing. It's intentional. It goes off the rails in the backside. And I didn't believe people because that's usually a cop out. I do believe them now. I just don't know if it was the right thing for them to do. It was full of incident. And I'm not unhappy that I watched it. Let's say there were some really there were some big laughs. There were some very big laughs in the thing itself. Had you seen it, Ben, or were you just familiar with like reviews and stuff?
Yeah, I saw a Red Letter Media review of it, so that's my basis of knowledge. But I wanted to ask, is it better or worse than his last movie, Aquaman?
I haven't seen Aquaman. I'm
half sure that he directed that movie.
I think that he did. You know,
so that one goes famously off the rails too, because it turns out it's about like a guy who can breathe underwater, and talks to fish, like just the stupidest things.
Wild. who would even think of that? Just nonsense. I'm supposed to believe that.
Next, they'll have someone that can like, I don't know, fly and shoot lasers from their eyes.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to. They're going to expect me to like a character Ben Affleck plays. Come on. So that was, I don't have anything. I've only seen like one of the Conjuring related movies and I thought it was just okay, but I like Saw, you know, so it's a fun movie. But, the other thing I've been watching is, Better Call Saul. Because I watched the first season of that and then fell off because watching television shows as they air is weird. But after we almost lost Bob Odenkirk over the summer, I was like, I probably better. I love Breaking Bad. It makes sense for me to see this show now. I've got four seasons to watch and it's very good. So That's
glad to hear.
That's what I've got. I've got non-game media that I have been enjoying.
See, my closest equivalent is I started watching Gravity Falls, because when I watch horror, I only watch horror intended for 12-year-olds.
That shit's sweet.
Yeah, I've heard nothing but good things about that show. That's about is that about a summer camp? Is that what that is?
It's about kids staying with their uncle for summer.
Okay.
But so, yeah, then it's just like every Lovecraftian and folklore monsters and, you know, stuff like that. Urban that's legend.
Fun. Yeah.
It's like Supernatural for kids.
Yeah. What have you been doing besides watching Gravity Falls, Dave?
Not a whole lot. I bought a dryer, so that's a thing.
Oh, fun.
So, although mainly to make it a little more weird, I bought a dryer predominantly so that I can dry fabric.
That's what mostly what I use mine for too, but it's fabric that is configured as clothes.
Oh no, I mean fabric so that I can make them into clothes.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah.
So
nice. Did you not?
Other than that, I'm working on a new cosplay, and as part of that, I had to learn today how to put on eyeliner, which was a whole adventure.
That interesting.
If you
fuck
that up,
you still have both your eyes.
If you fuck that up, it hurts so bad. I never got it for myself when I did theater. I always picked whatever woman I trusted most. Like, these are my fucking eyes. Just please, for the love of God. Yeah. Did that go okay?
Yeah. Overall, it is a interesting experience. Like, I don't know, like, I've learned that apparently makeup is like a whole thing.
Yeah.
Like Aquaman.
It just goes on your face. And like, what? I'm looking at this instead of your face.
Four experts talking about makeup right now.
Oh, gosh. You wear contacts, right?
I do not, actually.
Okay, I could have swore that you did.
So my vision is right on the line where I can wear glasses to like make things a little better, but I don't, for example, need them to drive. And so I have worn contacts before, however, I currently don't.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. So you're not you don't have like an instinctual revulsion to moving something close to your eye. You have put on contacts before, okay? Yeah, huh?
Now, is your cosplay a character that is established, or is this like a OC? I guess
I don't know how. Yeah, more or less works. OC. Just kind of combination of things. A group of friends here, a couple that their thing, like their style, is overtly like goth vamp or not goth vampire. That would make sense. Goth pirate.
Okay.
Oh.
And so they kind of do the whole Jack Sparrow type thing. So, you know, when I'm going to, you know, like a party or something like that, probably do it. Okay. And then also some of the helps with some of the kind of cat stuff with the LARP.
Yeah.
Just to kind of give the cat eye effect.
Yeah, give the impression of the shape. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
No, if you're gonna roll Sparrow Pill, you're gonna have to get used to eyeliner.
Yeah. It's really interesting. They are. I don't know. It's weird to me seeing like. I felt like I knew some like marginally goth people in you know, high school and stuff.
Yeah.
But then like this is the first time knowing people who are adults who are still into it. It's really interesting seeing like, you know, seeing people with like normal jobs and stuff like that, but yeah. You go to their house and it's like perma Halloween.
That rules. I gotta say I would be jealous of that lifestyle.
You know, if they decide to have kids, that leads to like goth 2-year-olds, which is the best.
Yeah, their cat is named, I think, like Edgar Meow and Poe.
That rules.
Goth 2-year-old. No one can understand me because I cannot talk right now.
Yeah, it's been really interesting, being exposed to culture I didn't know about. But there's some really cool people.
Nice. Well, that rules. Yeah, I don't have any follow-ups. Sounds like fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ben, how about you?
I'm doing pretty well. I had last Friday off, which was super nice. Ooh. I had a personal best. I ran 5 miles, so I was really happy about that.
The only time
I ran further was farther when we did the race together, Dennis. But so it's the second best I've done. Flip That's side of that, season. On Friday night, I rolled my ankle walking down the street then ate shit and on the pavement. So that part sucked.
Damn.
And so it's fine. Like, consequently, I'm going to the doctor today because I have a scrape on my arm that I need to get like checked out. So
yeah,
but
I like that you brought balance to the running force.
Yeah, I felt great.
You can't hurt your ankle, right?
No, yeah, no. I like my entire body was sore on Saturday, and I couldn't tell if it was from running or from the fall. I was like, I'm just gonna hang out and do nothing today. So
a little from column A, a little from column B.
Yeah. So I had a nice like hibernating weekend, and I think I feel back to like 100% now. So
that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I feel like I know maybe this is a martial arts thing, but like I very much have a hierarchy of like sports industry injuries where it's like. Mm-hmm. Oh, yo, cut, stuff like that. That'll heal. I mean, but a rolled ankle or something, you might be out for a bit, you know?
Yeah. I guess when I say rolled ankle, it means ankle rolled, but then immediately went into trying to catch myself phase and not like landing on a twisted foot or something like that.
Right. Yeah.
That's an important skill.
Yeah.
I just like the idea of a Maslow's hierarchy of ankle rolls.
Oh yeah.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I for some reason, like whenever I hear somebody describe an injury like that, I always think, okay, is that a season ender? And I only played a little bit of football. I don't watch football, but I still think of injuries, even on civilians, as season ending or not, which is weird. Yeah.
Something that's like kind of a joke in like martial arts that really is a joke is like going to the doctor and they ask you if you're experiencing any pain and you say only the normal amount.
Oh gosh.
I just like the idea of like, man, that's really going to interfere with his ability to make multiple trips through the sushi bar. So I think his season's done.
Oh gosh. Oh. Well, I'm sorry about your injury, but I'm happy about your personal best.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Personal. Now let the universe teach you the lesson of never do that again.
That's right. Never run. There is a funny part too. So I usually stop at a dog park downtown and like chill for a little bit. And so I was doing that and I got up to like jog the rest of the way and I'm like, oh, I am done running. My legs are completely shot right now.
Ooh, yeah.
We're walking home from here.
Yeah.
Probably, if I want to, because I can't now.
How about you, Dennis?
Yeah, I didn't want to swoop David, but I too have been working on a new cosplay.
Okay.
It's called a Halloween costume.
Ooh.
I feel like this is the one time of year where everyone is kind of working on a cosplay. So whether they know it or not, I think the family this year is going to be Beauty and the Beast.
Oh.
So Jen's going to be Belle. Mm. Luke is going to be Lumiere, which is very appropriate because Luke means light.
Oh, yeah.
Lumiere, you know, that all works, which leaves it to Milo to be Cogsworth.
Okay.
And he is not happy about that.
Who does he want to be?
Literally anything else. It changes every day. But I think what we worked around to is like we're going to bribe him. We'll be like, all right, we will give you a sweet whatever generic superhero you want costume to wear to school. We have to dress up for our pictures. And you have to wear like the family costume for trick-or-treating. And I think that's ameliorated. It's like, all right, I want to be a superhero to school.
That makes sense.
The simpering whiny clock for
are there other options? Like, could he be Gaston?
Could it be Chip?
That is being taken up by me, which is interesting that Jen pegged me as Gaston instead of the Beast. I gotta unpack that. No, I know why. It's because Barrett is gonna be the Beast.
We got a little
lion out for him, a lion outfit for him that we're gonna modify with the appropriate garb. And he's just going to be the cutest little beast that you've ever seen.
My favorite costume I've seen at this store so far is the boy's Taskmaster costume from Black Widow.
Oh,
okay.
Which, I don't know, have any of you seen it?
No, I haven't.
No, I have not.
Taskmaster's not a dude.
Huh.
Oh, I see.
Is that a routine?
Just like, I'm very pro, like, screw, like, you know, whatever, which gender can wear whatever costume.
Yeah.
So, I support that, but I also think whoever made this probably only saw, like, a very early draft.
Are they
a dude in the comics and it was a gender flip for the movie?
I guess that's kind of a spoiler, like, it's strongly implied throughout a good portion of the movie that is a guy and turns out not to be.
Okay.
Got it.
So I think it, like, if you just saw some, like, stills and were told, like, hey, make a costume of this,
mm-hmm.
like, you would definitely think it was meant to be a guy.
Yeah.
I just found that really funny.
Look, where's my Black Widow costume? That's what I want to know.
I mean, kinda. Oh man, that's a good costume. I
really want the shield. Yeah, not gonna lie.
No, but I don't
also,
know.
Surprisingly good movie.
Oh, yeah. I didn't watch it. I know nothing about Taskmaster.
I saw the Red Letter Media review of it. It's going to be a common theme of the night.
Oh, nice.
Red Letter Media review.
Yeah. Well, nice. Well, I think that sounds fun. You're doing a lot more preparation for Halloween costumes than my family ever did.
We're doing a lot more preparation for Halloween pictures. If there was not a camera involved,
there we go. No one would give a crap. Yeah.
Or none of the adults would give a crap, I'll say.
Oh man. Nice. Well, I think we've got that is good banter to me. I think we need to get and do a show, what with the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. And why don't we get started with
the grind?
The grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. I like to go in first before, so I'll do it now. This is for me now.
Please.
I played the opening of Metroid Dread.
Dude.
Ooh, all right. Nice.
Yeah. Picked that up. I hope that Jala managed to get hers. She ordered it and it was out. Do we have resolution on that? She got catfished by the UPS.
I think she did ultimately get it, but yeah, they even for like the stories of Amazon screwed me over, like, she particularly got screwed over.
What happened?
I was on the stream on Friday night, and she and she was like, yeah, it says it's still out, it's out for delivery. I might be getting my copy of Metroid Dread today. I was like, Jella, it's 7:30 p.m. So just got stuck between the seats kind of thing.
I guess they did a whole bunch of like, oh, well, we'll you know, deliver to it, you know, within 3 days. It's like, well, that defeats the purpose of pre-ordering with you guys.
It does.
Yeah. And, you know, then I'm not sure if there was a we totally delivered it. I think there was a period of time where, like, the truck that was supposed to be out for delivery was just, like, sitting around for hours on end.
Like, yeah, just, I remember seeing those posts. It was
that's frustrating.
Not to freak everyone out or go too Big Brother, but I was scrolling down the page for the Taskmaster Halloween costume that we just discussed.
Okay.
And the ads along the side are now all for Metroid Dread, so that was fast.
Weird. there are probably any number of, I was about to say, non-suspicious explanations for that, but no, they're all suspicious in different ways. No.
So is Metroid Dread, like, what if Metroid was survival horror?
A little bit. It feels, so far, it feels like it is kind of an extension of what they did in Metroid Fusion, which is weird. Because Metroid Fusion is a supremely weird game.
That's the one with, like, blue pseudo, like, Katsu Samus.
Well, yeah, where your main character is playing as the new Samus, and this parasite that mimics Samus is in the classic suit at full power and chasing you around, and you can't really do anything to fight her, so it's just a matter of running. So that was present in the series, and it has been present in the series for almost 20 years now. I mean, like, that game came out in, like, 2002, 2003, something like that. And for the longest time, it was the final game in the Metroid continuity, right? Like, Samus has this run-in with this parasite, and, you know, she thinks that it is dealt with, but then, you know, as always with Samus and with creatures from space, you think you got them all, but there's one that got away, and it's in the hands of the bad people. So it does take the pursuit-based play from Metroid Fusion, and it's still present here. But to me, at least to my memory, because it's been about 10 years since I played Metroid Fusion, the pursuit-based play is much more in short bursts. When the pursuing characters are out. So the idea is that, like, in the intervening time, the Galactic Federation or whatever put together these robots meant to hunt rogue bioorganisms or whatever. When they saw that the X parasites were, possibly on this planet, they sent these robot, you know, hunting, you know, killing machines.
BOWs?
Yeah, to fight the BOWs, and then they lost comms, and now these robots are hacked, and they are working with the creatures on this planet to hunt you down, and that is primarily who is seeking you out, and that's who you're fighting. The reason why I don't say that this is explicitly survival horror-y, even though you are disempowered against these particular enemies and you are running, is that this is probably the fastest paced Metroid I've ever played. Weirdly. So this is definitely following in the mode of the Metroid 2 remake, the Metroid Samus Returns, that came out on 3DS. That had pretty fluid movement, that actually had, like, a melee attack, like, parry and block system, where enemies that were doing, like, dive bombs at you or had their own, like, their own attacks, you could, and in fact, oftentimes for bosses and for the Metroids you were fighting, you were required to do a very well-timed block in order to make them vulnerable. All of that is present here. So it is taking these very basic mechanics and a feel from these two strange Metroid games and incorporating them and putting them pretty forward, when what I think everybody, like, wanted and expected was something closer to the Super Metroid mold. which I think if you're looking for Super Metroid, you are going to be disappointed here. Primarily because of the feel, because this does feel more action based than I think you are remembering Super Metroid being. Super Metroid being more kind of methodically paced and more about exploration. This is kind of more complex, more maze-like anonymous spaces with primarily like combat challenges and stuff that you're facing off against, at least so far, that I have seen.
Judging from the trailer, it reminds me of the episode Metalhead of Black Mirror, you know? It's like a robot dog like pursuing you the entire time. But
oh yeah.
What percentage of the game is this like pursuit based like gameplay and like running away from the dog thing?
So I've only gotten through like the first area. And they're called Emmys, E-M-M-I-E's. I've been chased by outside of the tutorial, I've been chased by I think maybe two or three, something like that, if I'm recalling correctly. Some of that might have been retries, because if they catch you,
are these set pieces, or is it like they're just kind of ambient in the world, or random encounters, or how is it kind of
the ones that I found are set piece. Are set pieces. Okay. It's like you very specifically like get to, you know, a particular terminal that you do, and it will give you like an omega beam, like a beam that you can aim and charge to fire and take some of them out, but you only have that in those particular areas after one's been kind of chasing you for a minute. The any of the ambient ones, like if they are here, it might be a little bit of like trickery is what I'm getting a sense, which is like they're making it seem like this is something that is pursuing you, but in reality it is present on the screen, and what you're trying to do is stay out of line of sight as it's searching for you, and then after you clear the screen or accomplish something, it'll move along. I don't think it's like a Resident Evil 2 remake. You have a region-wide pursuit, let's say. I could be wrong about that though, because again, I've played probably about an hour of it.
And it's like a single failure type thing. If it catches you, you have to like restart they make a
point. If this thing catches you, like, so if it sees you, you have to run. It catches you, you have like a vanishingly small window to parry it and get away. Like, and in the dialogue they say like, you know, there's a 99 point something chance that you're going to die if this catches you, so don't rely on that to be your sole source of safety.
I like that though. I like that you're never like, there's always a chance, right?
right. You know, so it kind of starts a little grab animation, like a little cinematic, and you just have like, you're just waiting for the flash of its you know, because a parryable attack, the timing is indicated by the enemy flashing. You're waiting for that flash so you can press the button and hopefully riposte it. Yeah. So. I'm okay. You know, I like it. I like it fine so far. I wish that the world had a little bit more personality to it. I wish that the enemies, again, so far, just what I've seen, had more kind of character to them than either alien blob or very sleek Apple designed robot kind of guy. That would be nice, but there could be more waiting for me later on. I've not really watched an awful lot of like coverage of it.
But let's be honest, I could see Apple designing the killer robots.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Mm. How many of the most recent Metroid games have been 2D like this?
Not many. Okay. Also, there haven't been very many recent Metroid games.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like, Samus Returns, that was a remake of Metroid 2, and that was on it was a very late it wasn't even late, it's like a late 3DS game. I think that was like 2015 or so. God, I'm gonna look and it's gonna be 2013 and I'm gonna turn to dust. prior to that, like the last 2D Metroid was 2010 with Metroid Other M, on the Wii, but that game is not very well regarded for like mostly like narrative reasons. The way that it's presented, it's real cinematic heavy. And a thing that will always be true is anybody who is making Metroid, you need to understand that nothing you write will ever be as cool as just letting silence happen so the atmosphere of the world can sink in. There is no information so important, there is no story beat so dramatic that you need to use a word to get it across when play could express it in this particular franchise for fans who are expecting it operating at its height.
Show don't tell, right?
Yeah, absolutely. More so with Metroid because of its history. You know, it's shown that it can work really well with a minimalist presentation, and even this opens with more talking than I would like. Hmm. Yeah. Hmm. So yeah, I would like to I'd like to play around a little more, but I wanted to dig in to something new. And I'm any criticism that I had, I am hoping to see addressed with more variety later on. Yeah. Any other questions about Metroid Dread?
No, your topic of show don't tell is just making me think of Shadow of the Colossus. So I'm kind of lost in that right now.
Yeah.
You ever just spaced out for like an hour thinking about Shadow of the Colossus?
Yeah. Just thinking about this really good game. Yeah. I space out for hours thinking about good games a lot. Maybe not for hours.
Most people don't talk about it while they're doing that, but that's
true. True. Yeah. People shouldn't know that I space out. yeah. So that's me. Metroid Dread is the only new one that I've got. But I figured I would lead with that there.
Sweet.
Yeah. Ben, you said sweet, so I'm going to throw it to you now.
Hell yeah. All right. Yeah. I got like three or four. I'll start off with the ones I've talked about a whole bunch. Continue playing Storybook Brawl. I am at my score rank right now is 2970, which is 30 away from being a different like ranking, and that's like a floor, so you can't go below 3000 once you get there.
Okay.
Wait, and if you're on numerical ranks, isn't one enough to be a different ranking?
Wait, what?
I say you said you're 2970, so wouldn't 2969 be a new rank?
Well, no, they have like intervals, so it's like every 500 points is like a different ranking. Okay. And basically, based on where you are, the awards for getting first place versus second or third or whatever are different based on like how high you are, so they get like less and less as time goes on. So like you get 75 points if you get in first place, and that's like 50 in second, and it's like 10 in fourth, but I can't remember what third is, probably 25. And then the first one you get per day, you get 25 points for. So I'm literally going to sandbag right now and then play a game after midnight. And as long as I get fourth or above, then I'll be the next tier up. So this is
this is your doctor's visit, isn't it?
No. But this is, I'm trying to emphasize like how sweaty the game's getting right now. But like once you get to 3K, that's when you have like an ELO, I think, rating, or that's when it starts becoming ELO. I think you have a ranking of like where you are. It'll be like, you know, X thousand or something like that.
Okay.
But I've been watching a lot of like streamers over the weekend. There's like the people who are in like the top 10 like stream, or at least two or three of them. And so it's really interesting to see like their strategy and kind of like how they evaluate cards and strategies. So many of them go for dwarves and just chill with that. Because that's like a pretty guaranteed rank four or higher.
Okay.
And then the other thing that's interesting is just the rating system is just like so, so punishing pretty much at any level. But especially when you get to the top, like they'll write down their rankings like for games, and it'll be like, you know, they'll be in the top four like 90% of the time, but they'll have like one seventh place finish or one like sixth place finish. And that's enough to like cancel out all their other like wins and places. Gosh. Yeah. Really? And so it's just super brutal.
That sounds really stressful.
Yeah.
Is that because there are that many people who are never having that one bad game?
I'm not sure how it works. I do know it's supposed to be ELO system, or at least people have referred to it as that. And so I'm guessing it's like a similar sort of thing as chess as well. And I knew
by the way, sorry to interrupt, but I learned and my mind was blown. ELO is not an acronym. ELO was the last name of the person who invented it.
Oh, I didn't know that either.
I could not get over that. Yeah.
I think part of it too is, like in like chess or whatever, if you win against someone who's ranked like way below you in score, you only get like a few points. And if you lose to them, you lose a whole bunch of points.
Okay.
I think a similar thing is kind of going on there. Cause it's like when you queue up for a lobby, it's just random people you're paired against. Right. And I'm not sure how close the matchmaking is, you know?
Right.
So I think that's probably part of it.
That seems like it would lead to a lot of like lobby drops. I don't know if that's an option, but it's like, if somebody comes in who is, that's not.
If you lobby drop, you get eighth place. So, that's not an option. Well, yeah. So you gotta
not an option if you care about your rank. Yeah.
And so there are like a few strategies I was unaware of. There's like one sick strategy that I've done a couple times, like from seeing them play. That's awesome. There's a strategy called Hat Ball, which is. So I think I mentioned this before, but the idea is you it's like Magic, kind of. You're drafting characters, you can play seven at a time. That's like an auto chess battler. If you get three of the same character, they level up and they'll like have some sort of buff and they'll have like better stats, but they combine into one character instead of being three separate ones.
Okay.
And then in addition, when you do that, you get an artifact, which is some sort of thing that'll be like some sort of global effect on your like all your characters or something, like everyone gets +1/+1, or when an evil character dies, deal 3 damage to a random enemy or something like that. So okay. That's like what an artifact does. So there's two artifacts that are at level 3. One of them's called Merlin's Hat, which reduces all spells by two costs. You can only buy one spell per round typically. There's a few exceptions.
Okay.
And then there's another level 3 thing called Crystal Ball, which is you can target if you target your own creature with a spell, some spells target your creature to like buff them or something like that.
Okay.
Then you get another spell added to the store and you can cast another one if you want. And so when you get both of these things, you have both spells that cost 2 less and spells that restock themselves. You can get in this like infinite combo of just like buffing and buffing and buffing your creatures. And so there's a few creatures you can play off this where they'll buff every time you cast a spell, and you can get this like runaway effect here, where you just like, I don't know, you buff all your creatures a whole bunch for free, and then you just like, yeah, and then you just like steamroll everyone else.
so is this something that people are just engaging in the sweet, sweet period of time before it's patched out?
Possibly. It's like decently well balanced, because you get a random like pool of 3 artifacts, so you're not guaranteed to get the ones that you care about.
Okay.
There's certain heroes who work better for it than others. There's one hero that I thought was like bad. It was Peter Pan, and the ability of Peter Pan is he starts at level 3, which everyone else starts at level 2.
Okay.
But he doesn't grow up, so he just stays at level 3 the entire time. But to mitigate that, instead of leveling up, every time you would level up, your creatures get +1/+1 in the store. So you're like, your creatures kind of grow a little bit bigger, but it's still like the level 2, level 3 creatures. So normally that was kind of weak. Usually, like once people got like level 6 creatures, they would just like roll over you. However, since you only have level 2 and level 3 creatures, it's really easy to triple level 3 creatures, and so it's really easy to do this like hat ball strategy, mm-hmm. and then kind of go off the rails on that. So
yeah, so
it's just like interesting evaluations I hadn't considered, like seeing people who are like really, really good at the game do it. And then it's interesting to see like the creatures that they just like hard ignore and just like refuse to pick if there's like any other option, or likewise with like the heroes. You know, like certain ones they really like more than others because they're consistent, and then certain ones they'll just never pick because it's like too risky or a long shot or
I hate it when the only thing, like the only option that works for me in a game is roundly decried as a noob trap in the meta. it's like, just let me have some dignity, please. It's the only way I can win.
So let me in on the So for the terminology, noob trap is something that's easy to play, but generally not good enough to actually win.
Pretty much, like it would be something where like, oh, this is seemingly really powerful for a simplistic way of playing that anybody more sophisticated than you will be able to get around. Would be like in a PvP kind of situation. Like there are new traps in PvE stuff, like the Drake Sword and Dark Souls, right? Where it's mm-hmm. really good, but using it stops you from needing to learn about weapon scaling. And if you're not upgrading stuff because that doesn't scale, you're eventually going to be outclassed compared to if you just used a different weapon and invested in a different weapon that started weaker but scaled with your stats as you leveled. So like it's not about somebody else, you know, outsmarting you. It's just like, yeah, you actually can't grow fast enough in power to keep up with the challenges they're going to throw you. Yeah,
sure.
I suppose a noob trap could also be, like, specifically in a card game, something that seems ridiculously overpowered but is so specific or so convoluted that it will never actually work in a game, like, I think, versus just being easy to play.
Yeah, yeah. Just it boxes you in some way, is my idea. Am I anywhere close mm-hmm. to right on that, Ben?
I mean, yeah, there's certain strategies that seem, like, really, really dominant, but they have a good job of, like, having counters for each things, and that's kind of like the fun too, is like a lot of times when you get to the top two, you have to kind of like evaluate what the other person's doing and be like, all right, how can I beat this? Like, is there a certain spell I can try and roll for to find to like that would really like effectively hurt them? Or like, is there any combination of like artifact and creature I could go for to try and turn the tide? It's super rewarding when you can put that together and try and do that.
How locked into your strategy are you by the time you make the top two, though?
It depends. So, like, if you're going dwarves, you're pretty much going dwarves all the way. That has an interesting strategy where there's a level 6 character that you absolutely need for it to work. Otherwise, it just doesn't work. And so there's a concept of doom rolling for the creature's called Lordy. And so you're doom rolling for Lordy. And, like, and... yeah, so there's like nice parallels there where it's like you're praying to Lordy, and why has Lordy forsaken you by not appearing in the shop? But I don't know. But certain ones you can pivot out of. I think one that I was like proud of is like there was a person who had like range people in the back, and that would do a lot of damage. And I was able to get a treasure where your first character gets plus 100. I was able to get a character that's like this dragon that attacks a person and the two people behind them. So I was able to like pivot around what the other person was doing without mm-hmm. too much, like without affecting my strategy too much. Also, there's like some combinations that I hadn't seen other people did that I was able to put together that I felt like really good about. So yeah, I don't know. The game still has value. I've probably talked about it way longer than I should have. I just wanted to do a brief mention, but
yeah, I appreciate like your explanation of this game over the course of the weeks that you've done it has mm-hmm. taken me from like, what the fuck is he talking about? To like, I feel like I actually have a better grasp. I actually understand how this game goes.
I feel like I've learned enough about it that I don't feel like I have to play it for myself. So thank you.
I'm happy with it because I'm playing this instead of playing Magic right now, and this is free, and Magic is not necessarily, so that's kind of where I come down on it.
Nice.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. All I saw was nice.
I feel that, like, I could see myself, like, being close to being done with it in a couple weeks, maybe, mm-hmm. if, like, because I think, like, the meta is starting to kind of firm up, you know, a little bit.
Yeah.
And so once you get to that point, then it's kind of like, all right, time to try something else. Yeah. I don't know if they'll be able to keep up with, like, making changes to the game that are significant enough to, like, keep people's interest in it. But mm-hmm. we'll see. Yeah. All right. So that's all I got to say about that. I'm going to go on to other things. I continued playing There Is No Game, Wrong Dimension, which is, like, the point-and-click adventure game that I talked about a week or two ago. I found out it's made by a French person, so the accent is French, not Belgian, as I guessed the last time I talked about it.
I bet you they get real, real cranky about that if you mix them up.
Yeah, so sorry for any viewers who that offends them. The game got better. I think So there's basically seven levels to the game. Mm-hmm. Where I was at last time was like the second or third one. But it's like consistently gotten better with each level as it's gone on. And I'm pretty sure it was made chronologically, but, or maybe they just ordered it, like worst to best, but I've been more and more impressed with like the puzzles of it and kind of the mechanics of like how you interact with the world. They've kind of gotten a little bit more complex, but yeah, it's a pretty like creative game, like all the way through. So I've enjoyed that. I'm on the last chapter right now. I haven't finished it yet, but like I think I've been most impressed by like what they're doing in the last chapter. This is like, oh, I didn't know you could do that in a game. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. So yeah, so like pretty good review of that. It's not like a necessarily like a must play. If you like point and click adventures, then it certainly like a hearty recommendation there. It's definitely, if it's on sale, it's definitely worth picking up. I found out a backstory of it too is like the creator put it in Kickstarter, and apparently like nobody saw the video that they made for it, and it got it just didn't get a lot of coverage, and so it didn't get a lot of backing for Kickstarter. It didn't like make its goal, but he decided to like continue on and try and make it anyway, and so really mm-hmm. happy that it got out and he was able to like, you know, complete it and everything. So yeah, and some of that kind of comes into the game too. The narrative's interesting. There tries to be some like emotional plot point at some point. It's okay. Mm-hmm. If you're into that, maybe it's good. I don't know.
There is just catharsis.
You can ignore it if you aren't into it, and it's fine. But yeah, I don't know. I don't have much else to say about it besides that. I don't really want to talk specifics about the later levels because like. Since it's a game that relies so much on creativity and like surprise value, like yeah. it's kind of worth like going into it blind.
Yeah, it really relies on novelty, you know. So last time you described the sequence with the television,
yeah.
where you can look around from multiple different angles and interact with things to make otherwise yep. impossible things happen. Do they continue doing cool, you know, meta play with the box kind of stuff like that?
They continue doing meta things, but they don't use that same mechanic, which I respect.
Yeah, you know,
it's like it's just in the one level, and then they go and do other things and other mechanics for each of the other levels.
That's good.
Yeah. So yeah. Anyway, I don't know if I'll say much more about it or not. I'll probably finish the game sometime this week. But
cool. What game?
All right, I got a couple more. There's one game that I started playing that I heard about from a streamer that I watch. So there's a streamer I watch who plays Slay the Spire and is really into that. His name is Jorbs, but he has a list of 100. Yeah, I know. He has a list of 100 games that he wants to play. And so he's posted online and you can like go and look through, and it's like broken down by type. And so I was looking through that, and there was a game I found there that seemed interesting, where it was like a Factorio type game that's also a tower defense game. It's called Mindustry or Mindustry. I'm not sure. It's industry with an M in front of it, so figure okay. it out.
Huh.
But it's like a low res game, and it's pretty akin to Factorio, where you are mining resources and you're trying to build things with them. But it's an interesting like take on that genre, where it's tower defense. And so the idea is like you're on a planet and there's different like levels on the planet, and you gradually unlock them by beating the level that you're on. And so in a given level, you have like waves of enemies who will spawn and come after your base of like whatever you're building and just try and shoot it and kill it. And you basically can make turrets, walls, and factory stuff to like refine resources to make turrets and walls. And so it's a weird kind of like rush at the beginning, where you just need to create things quickly enough to like fight off these bad guys. And then after all the waves over, the level's quote unquote complete, but then you're left to mine like the map that you're on, and you can like build as much a factory as you want and mine as many resources as you want. And then you can unlock, you have like a tech tree, and you can start unlocking that based on resources that you pay to do that.
Okay.
And so there's this like weird flow where and then at the end, after you've mined as much as you want, you go to the next level, but then you take all the mined resources you have with you up to a cap that you have.
Right.
And so then there's this like weird flow of gameplay where it's like you land, you're like, oh shit, I need to build a bunch of stuff. And you try and build like turrets really quickly. And you try and stave off people. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And then there's this feeling of take as much time as you want and then explore this map and then like mine a bunch of stuff and learn some tech.
Right.
So I've played maybe about 3 or 4 levels of this. And so the one thing that I'm like a little bit maybe like concerned with, for lack of a better word, is like I've unlocked a good portion of the tech tree. Like there's like 1 or 2 resources I haven't gotten yet. And those are the, like the branches that are closed off to me. But I've gotten a good portion of the tech tree besides that. And the level that I'm on now, like kind of ramped up in difficulty somewhat quickly. So I need to like figure out how to deal with that wave portion, like pretty quickly.
Right. Cause the game isn't going to be handing you an awful lot of like production multipliers that will just solve the problem with numbers. Like is there like just an efficiency barrier that you have to get through?
I guess it's more like figuring out a good strategy. Cause it's like, with the current build I had, I would like have wall turrets and stuff, but like each wave would kill like a layer of the wall.
Right.
And you can build things that will mend like things, like automatic repair things in the area. So it'll repair walls or to repair like, I don't know, anything that's like damaged but not dead. But the problem is usually they'll just destroy like a wall before it can be like mended. So it's like, it's this weird thing where it's like you don't have time to go back and build the rest of your factory because you have to constantly attend to fixing what just got broken.
And
then you're kind of stuck in a loop where you're like slowly losing ground, and so that part kind of sucks. So like I just need to like restart that level, I guess. But they do give you a lot of options of like what sort of turrets you want to build and like how you need to supply them based on which one it is. So it's like there's these base copper turrets that are, you know, good old trusty copper. That's like your bread and butter of this game, I guess. And you load copper. So you build them with copper, but then you load copper in them for the ammunition.
Okay.
And that's what it uses to fire. And so there's like interesting gameplay that comes out of that, where it's like depending upon how you set up the lines of the copper feeding in kind of dictates how quickly they get reloaded.
Mm-hmm.
So like if you have a short line of copper to each turret, that comes down, they might burn through and shoot everything really quick and then not have enough copper like in the bank to like reload, and you might be like down. It is interesting. Like I do think it's an improvement over like Factorio as far as you care about and what things you don't need to care about. Mm-hmm. Like everything's a square in this game. They don't mess with like the arms or anything like that at all.
Oh, that's good.
Like things that are like resource producers, they'll just automatically output to any line that's next to them.
That can
create interesting problems though, where it's like if you accidentally run a line next to it, then you can kind of like pollute the lines.
Oh, and you have to take them down. Do you even have the ability to take them down and recover the stuff?
Yeah. You can erase things, and it's really streamlined. If you right click, it makes like a red box, and you'll like take apart everything that's in that box.
Gotcha.
So it's really simple. There's not as much like kind of in Satisfactory and Factorio. There's like this emphasis on like building is really slow and you want to try and automate it. They don't really have that as much here.
Mm-hmm.
So like if you make a line of conveyor belts, they're built pretty instantly.
Yeah. But
some of the bigger structures like do take a longer amount of time, and that's basically to make it so that you have to do it in between waves. Like enemies can shoot something that is in progress being built and it will like immediately destroy. So
yeah.
Yeah, so the building on it's like interesting. The level, the fact that it's like a smaller level, I think is a really good enhancement to like the Factorio type, because you don't get this like infinite complexity machine that like becomes too like unwieldy and like you start to like feel sad about.
You like, because you've just saddled yourself with infinite technical debt for any change you want to make. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel dread thinking about my factory and satisfaction. Like we fucked up the power, and it's like you have to like re-jump your base, and it's like so painful.
You have to build like whole new generators just to get it going.
Yeah, you literally do. You power your generators to power the rest of your base. Anyway, nightmare, absolute nightmare. Anyway, this game, it's pretty fun. It's like $5, so it's also like pretty low investment. So it's an interesting take on like that genre, and I think it does like improve it in certain respects.
Yeah. That rhythm sounds really neat to me.
Yeah, I think there could be still some room for improvement of like how to get the flow of the game a little bit better to like allow you to build in peace and then like take on a wave or something like that without like the time pressure. But I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, and I think I just have one more game to talk about. Sorry for going on so long.
That's all right.
There's a demo of a game I played that is supposed to release sometime this month. It's called Inscription.
Yeah, and that's coming out next week.
Crypt is spelled like Crypt Keeper type crypt. Inscription. Yeah. Crypt. Ah. Yeah, whatever. So it's a play on words. This is a really sweet horror game. So this is what I kind of want to tell you about it, Cole. But I guess you already played...
No. I put it on my calendar because I saw the there was a demo and there was a release date. This is by the Pony Island and the Hex guy.
Is it?
Yeah. Same developer, Daniel Mullins. He's done some stuff with Dread X as well. It looks really cool. Horror based card game, right?
Yeah. Okay. Wow. That totally recontextualizes it for me. It's a very interesting take in comparison to the other games that he's done because it's not like maybe like tongue-in-cheek like meta type stuff, but it is like it's really good horror so far where it's like really unsettling and really like disturbing. Let me give you an example from the demo. So you know, like normally you lose a run of a card game, right? You just restart the game, right?
That's the way it goes.
And this one, if you're playing on a table across from just a pair of eyes, and the room is so dark that you can only see their eyes, when they talk, they become very swirly and like not eyes. And then when he's not talking, they just become eyes that are looking at you. They're looking at you the entire time. Very creepy. If you mess up and you end your run, the camera just shows the person's hands reaching out towards you directly.
Okay.
And it's like very creepy in the same vein as like Phasmophobia. And then it cuts to a camera shot of you being drug into a room that's nearby. And then it's the person interrogating you and asking you to make a card to symbolize your death. And you can choose like the stats of the card and like all these features of a card. And then he takes a picture of you before he kills you and puts the picture of that on the card.
Okay.
And then in subsequent plays, that is a card that you can pick in your deck building game. It is creepy as fuck.
Like, wait, it takes a picture of your like using your webcam?
No. It's not of you yourself. Okay. It's just like an in-game like your has avatar. A camera, takes a picture of your character before they die sort of thing.
Okay.
Some other instances of like fucked upness, and I won't give many more examples because I don't want to spoil too many, but the premise it works is it's like a card game where you place cards across from one another, they attack one another in turn-based fashion. It's like kind of similar to Magic, kind of similar to Storybook Brawl. It's not random like Storybook Brawl as far as what attacks what. There's a structure behind it, but it's not like Magic where you choose like this attacks this implicitly. It's just whichever slot you put it in, those creatures will fight one another now. But it's asymmetrical, like this one attacked the other one, and so they don't trade damage. It's like one gives damage to the other.
Yeah.
But the balance is so if you put a creature in front of another creature, your creature will attack theirs and presumably kill it. But if you put the creature in front of an empty spot, it attacks the other player. And there's a scale. And so for every point of damage, it's like a token on the scale. And for every point of damage you receive, it's a token on the scale on the other side. And if the balance ever goes from one side or another, then you win the game. And there's a item they give you, which is a, I don't know, like a what's like, not like a vise, but like a clamp or something that you can use to like, I don't know what the tool's called, but like basically
calipers.
And what you can use them for is you can use it to rip out one of your teeth and place it on the scale as a point of damage. It's like incredibly disturbing, incredibly fucked up looking, but they play it, you know, they play it straight and they play it like very creepily. There's a narrative in the game where one of the cards is trying to help you get out of the situation and is talking to you. It's awesome. This game's like, I've only played the demo, but it seems really, really cool. The fact that it's like so heavy with narrative, but then there's also this card game in it that's perfectly like a perfectly good card game, very similar to Slay the Spire in terms of like gameplay, where there's like an overworld map you're traveling down that has different like events on it,
choices based on the potential reward. Yeah,
and there's like boss battles and stuff. So I'm very excited to play it, especially for Halloween. Looks like the release date is exactly a week from now on the 19th.
Next Tuesday. Just seeing who made it and seeing a screenshot and like a two sentence description, I was like, oh yeah, this sounds amazing. I want to stream this. So
yeah, I had no idea it was the same person. So awesome. Thank you for sharing that information.
Yeah.
So yeah. Awesome. That's cool.
Daniel Mullins does good work.
Yeah, that makes me even more excited about it. So
yeah.
All right, that's all I got.
Cool.
Oh, is that all?
Yeah, sorry. Sorry, gabbed on.
You had Starbuck Brawl, There Is No Game, Wrong Dimension. What did you have before Inscription? Minestrone.
Industry, yes. With an M in front of it.
Yes. Thank you. I forgot to write that down. Mindestry. Cool. Nice. David, how about you?
Sure. So I've been playing two games, continued on with Warframe, got to check out their Halloween event. So this is going to require some background explanation and some fairly minor spoilers.
Okay.
So in Warframe, there's a precursor race called the Orican, who are, functionally immortal, have basically technological advance that allows them to avoid death. And so the people you meet on this, infested asteroid are kind of these holdover Orcans that have mostly survived the downfall of the rest of the race, although they are currently like partially infected by like Zerg disease stuff. But so the in-world Halloween is basically the Orcan celebration of basically victory over death, where they basically dress up in various spooky things in order to mock death.
Okay.
It's like anti
seems a little excessive, right? Rubber digging to everyone else, like, yeah, we're not gonna die and we're gonna make fun of death.
Yeah, they do point out that apparently death had the last laugh, because like other than the five people on this planet, all of them are dead.
Well, you know.
the really what this mostly means is just if you run some of the missions, you get some kind of tokens that you can turn in for Halloween themed like cosmetics and things like that. But it's actually really generous. So some fairly good cosmetics. One that gives your character demon wings. One that makes your character just constantly surrounded by this cloud of kind of misty bats. Some actually fairly endgame level weapons. Things like that. So like actually pretty generous in terms of like comparing them to them being of the quality of things that you would normally like pay real money for.
Yeah, and just as a holiday event bonus.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of fun. It's also just fun hearing the character that you turn into this stuff to so the holiday in world is called like Navaris. or something.
Okay.
And just hearing her do like spooky voices, you're welcome to Nazareth. You know, stuff like
welcome
that.
Welcome to Nazareth. Ah, crap. Wrong holiday.
Ah, damn.
Yeah. Yeah. It's yeah. But yeah, so it's fun. This is, I'm pretty sure continues what I think is one of the most endearing things of this series, which is they don't have any professional voice actors.
Is it just people from around the studio?
Yep. So like the your main handler in the game is like the community manager for the game, I think.
Oh, he has a lot of leverage.
And I think like the character that's kind of there, the game's sort of equivalent to like a Nemesis or a Mr. X type character, kind of a, you know, super powerful character that kind of stalks you, is I think the lead programmer.
Okay.
So, you know,
I feel like he's in every part of this game.
Yeah, you know. So yeah, it's you know, just fun and silly and kind of cool. I did forget one of my favorite things of this setting, which I think this setting meaning the newest open world level where it's on this basically infested asteroid or something that's orbiting Mars. All of the open worlds have some sort of day-night cycle. But in this case, it's not so much day and night as it is there's a pair of like 100 story tall worm creatures that bioluminesce. And they're like locked in like eternal conflict where, you know, one of them basically shoots like this laser beam at the other and like explodes it. And then, you know, so then it's providing light to the planet for a while. And then eventually the one that exploded regenerates and, you know, gets revenge by exploding the first one. And so you're not actually having day or night. You're just having what color of worm is currently bioluminescing all over the asteroid.
It's like playing the original Game Boy Advance. You're playing by worm light.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So yeah, I feel like that is a good example of just how like bonkers, you know, pseudo body horror monster stuff is going on.
Are there any mechanical effects to the fact that this is a worm powered solar economy?
Yeah, so a couple of things. So in the open world settings, you can fish and you can like hunt or like try to capture animals, kind of Metal Gear Solid 5 style. You have to trank animals in order to rescue them to a nature preserve.
Mm-hmm.
And different animals and fish are active either only at day or only at night.
Okay.
When a worm gets exploded, it, you know, scatters bits of the worm all over the level, and you can collect them and use them as fishing bait.
Okay.
And then they also somewhat affect the games. So it's like, I think it's, you know, one of them, there's more enemies, but the necromechs are not active and you can actually like take control of them to fight the enemies. The others, there's less enemies, but the necromechs are active and will attack you.
Oh, okay.
See, you can talk about Storybook Brawl enough that it starts to make sense. You can never talk about Warframe enough that it starts to make sense.
I mean, part of this is, it is has a storyline that has a lot of plot twists, so I'm having to like leave out all of the bits that kind of make more sense, yeah, but it's still mostly crazy.
But the necromechs are like the bigger mechs that you and your frame can pilot. right? So
yeah, more or less.
Yeah, so like it's just like by day, quote unquote. You know, hear me out. You have, you know, mounts that you can use for easier combat to kill different things. But if you go at night, then they are tough enemies for you to take out. Is that the case?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, also, noteworthy, the, conservation, the animals you're, rescuing are, pseudo horrifying, or super horrifying rather. They're basically,
I can accept either. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so for example, one of them is this like dog type, creature. And, you know, again, like Metal Gear Solid style, you know, with Ocelot giving commentary on whatever animal you rescue, you know, kind of has a similar thing. And so for this one, it, you know, the person comments that it's adorable when they go to sleep because all of their parasites go to sleep at the same time. Oh. So just, you know, just stuff like that. That's like, that's a little weird.
Cool, like sci-fi source book, world building kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. There's also, you every so often find some funny things. They have like procedurally generated or randomly generated like traits. So when you catch a specific creature, it'll say like, you know, oh, this one's, you know, particularly aggressive, or you know just different things. And I think some of the funny ones is you'll sometimes get like a bird whose trait they assigned is afraid of heights.
His life is hell. Don't laugh at him.
so the whole thing's very strange, but you know, still a lot of fun.
Nice.
Other than that, actually picked up a game on Game Pass that's just released today. Have any of you guys looked at Back 4 Blood yet?
Oh.
The new Left 4 Dead, like.
Yeah, it's basically Left 4 Dead 3.
So I was playing some games last night with some friends, and we were deciding like whether we heard it got like lukewarm reviews, so we decided to play Duck Game instead. But have you played it yet?
Yeah, so I've played the first, I think, two or three kind of sets of missions. So it's, you know, it's set up in the general, you know, zombie apocalypse. As far as I can tell, maybe there's some sort of, like, worm parasite that is responsible for it this time around. I don't know, but your characters take on the role of, quote, cleaners. And so, one of the kind of different things is the game, the storyline much more emphasizes you proactively going after the zombies as opposed to it being the story of, like, you trying to escape from them.
Right. Okay.
So, you know, you're operating out of this kind of fortified base and are, you know, very explicitly set out to, like, go wipe out, you know, nests of zombies and rescue people and things like that. So that, you know, that's kind of an interesting change of pace. There's, 8 characters. They all seem to have, you know, the different personalities, you know, the different commentary and discussions, like you'd expect from Left 4 Dead.
One really likes hot dogs.
Exactly. what's his name that just over the course of the game you got the list of like the 300 things he hates. But they also all have a specific perk. Well, actually two perks. One perk that's for them and then one perk that they give to the party as a whole. So, for example, one of them, once every 60 seconds, can, if they get captured by, like, the game's equivalent of a hunter or a, I forget what the one with the tongue is called, licker or something.
Smoker,
that's right. they can actually free themselves.
Okay.
Nice.
And so if you're playing as that character, you have much more ability than normal to go off on your own and kind of, you know, split off from the party and scout.
Yeah.
That's the other big thing is, you know, this is definitely a game that's Left 4 Dead plus all of the, you know, advances that have, you know, kind of happened in gaming since then. So there is very much a perk system, you know, where you, it's basically implemented as a deck of cards that you generate, and every submission in a act or whatever, the AI director chooses a card that makes the game more difficult, and then you can choose a card from your deck to get you know, make you more powerful.
Oh, that's cool.
Likewise, there's a little bit of a roguelike element, so you can find attachments for your guns randomly, and also you know, guns that are rarer and therefore more effective. Likewise, you can find as you're going over over the course of a run, you're finding caches of money, which you can buy at various vendors to get basically get extra cards that you know, are only in effect during that run.
Yeah.
So so overall, it seems pretty neat. Seems like they added a lot to the genre. The biggest thing I'm not sure of, and this is actually something I've noticed with Warframe, now that I have a better computer that can run higher graphics settings as well, is as graphics improve, it's kind of becoming a bit of a problem where a lot of games, especially like these, really revolve around the ability to pick out specific types of enemies and you know, react accordingly.
It's the clutter problem.
Yeah, exactly. This is especially bad because over the course of a level, you know, your characters get, you know, progressively more covered in gore and stuff like that, mm-hmm. to the point where it becomes very difficult, at least for me, to identify friend from foe.
Ooh.
And there is friendly fire.
Oh, that's bad.
Do you think that's intentional?
I'm not sure, honestly.
You want to know.
You want to be able to tell. Is there any world in which that's fun, though, even if it is intentional?
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. Grant, like, if you play on the way it, I know the way it is for the easiest difficulty here is there's no friendly fire. And at least in Left 4 Dead, that was something that very much ramped up as you went higher difficulties. So, like, normal difficulty in Left 4 Dead, you did very little damage.
Mm-hmm.
But then you know, at whatever the highest difficulty is, you could nearly one-shot people.
Yeah.
I think more the thing I'm seeing is a lot of the enemy types I have difficulty distinguishing. And in particular, this game's equivalent of, like, boomers. So, you know, enemies that
are from the 50s.
In age. Damn it, Ben!
I shake my head at you. That, you know, when you kill them, they explode and, you know, splatter you with, you know, stomach acid. The problem is that the game's very much encourages certain characters are based around melee builds.
Oh.
And I haven't figured out how you're supposed to deal with this.
How you're supposed to mitigate the boomer bile. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, saying every game needs to do this because Valve did it this way, like, that's not necessarily great. However, one of the things that Valve did, especially in the Team Fortress 2 era, was really establish the importance of silhouette. And in a game, you know, with special undead or whatever you call these, like being able to very quickly at a glance, even without necessarily like, you know, saying the name of the thing in your head when you recognize it, but very quickly understand this is the tactic that I need for this shape seems pretty right. important. And it, I don't know why they would move away from that.
Like, yeah. And, you know, it's possible that, you know, to a certain degree, you know, the special infected from Left 4 Dead have kind of become very much a classic that has been imitated in tons of games. So, you know, it could possibly be just like this is something that's long established and, you know, after right. playing for a bit, you know, it will be easy to recognize it.
Right.
It is very easy to recognize them from regular infected, or their name in this game for the zombies is Ridden.
Okay.
Because all of the all of the special infected, special Ridden, whatever, have these kind of glowing boils that are their weak spots.
Okay.
And so it's very easy to recognize that there's something that's not a regular zombie. It's just more difficult to tell specifically what type of zombie it is.
So, David, yeah. when you're tired of your save game, are you overridden?
Wah, 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 wah. So the, those are most of my impressions so far. The other probably big kind of, you know, talking point is the fact that the game has separate progression for when you're playing solo.
Okay.
And a lot of people aren't necessarily happy about that.
Why would that be? I mean, not why would they, why would people be unhappy, but why would they make it make that the case? Is it just to stop people from like finding an exploit to like automatically train up and get perks ahead of time? Like you need to be in a verified match in order for it to count.
It could also just be a piracy thing.
Oh yeah, I could see that too.
Maybe dissuading the lonely grind.
Yeah,
I'm honestly not sure. I think there's a Polygon article that you know discusses it, where one of the developers kind of gives their case, but I don't really care that much, so I've actually read it.
Right, right.
But I'm, you know, just bringing that up because that seems to be one of the big, you know, topics of discussion among you know, people playing it.
Yeah.
Big question I have is it worth $60 or $240 if you're trying to play it with four people?
Ooh. It is worth GameStop. Game not GameStop, Game Pass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or...
yeah, that changes the calculus. Substantially.
It does.
Yeah.
Who are the poor suckers paying full price, though, is the problem?
Oh, people who don't want to use Microsoft Storefront.
That's fair.
Which is weird. If you're if you want to play with other people on Steam.
I'd be interested to know the logic or whatever behind Game Pass, because it seems like the last, you know, there has been like a month and a half, something like that, when there were almost no particularly noteworthy releases added to it. And then all of a sudden it's been, you know, this, Destiny 2, Avengers, a couple other things. Granted, you know, debatable whether those are super good games, but they're at least, you know, they're big name games.
High profile, you know.
Right, so I'd be interested to know, you know, I'm sure there is some sort of metric of, like, exactly how often we need to do this and, you know, how to gap them and things like that, but yeah. I'd be interested to know.
I don't know. I don't know if they, like, make a deal to get one and they sit on it for a while, or if, you know, it's just kind of like, yeah, just not much happens in games during the summer. Just, like, not much happens in a lot of non-Hollywood industries over the summer. Don't know.
I know.
The their decision to make the characters play differently sounds major to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So far, almost none of it that I've seen is super dramatic. But yeah, it definitely is a thing.
Yeah.
I think adding the RPG, if you can level up your character like that, it sounds like you do it through cards, but it seems like that's a really differentiating point between Left 4 Dead, where you kind of have long-term progress.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Also, it seems like they've kind of got a pretty interesting cast of characters so far.
Cool.
I know at least one of the guys is a crazy conspiracy theorist prepper dude that looks like what's the conspiracy theorist dude from Big Lebowski?
Walter?
Yeah.
Looks like Walter Sobchak.
There's also a character just called Mom that is apparently former mom.
Oh god, that's sad.
Former, oh no.
Yeah. So it is established that her son was killed fighting the zombies.
Okay.
So a lot of speculation is she going to retire or not, and apparently not.
No, probably pretty.
She's
pissed
not
off.
Retiring, but she's retiring.
Right, but I feel like badass mom not that common in video games.
No, Grandia 3 or Grandia 2, I forget which one. Yeah. Huh.
So yeah, just stuff like that.
Yeah. No. That just got a launch here recently. So I hope that does better for Turtle Rock than Evolve did, because Evolve never really seemed to happen.
I feel so bad about Evolve, because everything I've heard was that was mostly a good game. I think they just released it too early.
Yeah, they monetized it weird.
I also think I still think developers need to learn that, unless you're PUBG or Fortnite, no one likes PvP.
I don't know. Asynchronous multiplayer's fun. But
Among Us is cool.
Yeah.
Let me tell you about Spitgate.
Well, Dennis, we should probably get to you, because we're running a little bit long on our time here. So I will throw it to you.
Don't worry, I will shore that up real quick.
Okay.
I tried to play a new game this week.
Oh.
The Cycle, you guys will remember, was near and dear to my heart, but kind of died on the vine, and was kind of reworked into what they're calling the Cycle Frontiers, and it's I understand much more like Escape from Tarkov. And ooh, so this kind of hit a beta that they, are letting people into recently. And I was like, it earned enough goodwill in its original form for me to check out the new form.
Okay.
However, every time I try to start the game, it crashes my computer. Oh. And I'm not talking to desktop. I'm not talking blue screen. I'm talking literally turns the power off on my computer, hard reset style.
Hey Dennis, so I would uninstall
that. So it's trying to new world it.
Yeah. So after the second time that happened, I was like, I'm not interested in this happening again.
No.
And I did not play that game.
So no one application should have all that power.
So I tried. Really, the only other new-ish thing is the new season of Trackmania maps is out. So every 3 months, they put out a new set of 25 maps. That's kind of the main campaign for the game. Mm-hmm. The notable thing about these ones are they're a bit easier than last season. That's fine. That's all right. I think it would be weird if they kept on pushing the difficulty ad infinitum, because that would just gate new people out of the game.
Yeah.
But it was weird for me to kind of breeze through the campaign.
Usually it's a little more meatier.
Yeah. Last season just brutalized me and brutalized a lot of people.
Right,
So it was weird to feel good at the game.
Do new seasons come with new tiles, new playset stuff for you to make tracks with?
They're doing that about like once a year or every couple of seasons. So yeah, they came out with a big set of new tiles last season. And there are some that came out for people to build with last season, but were not in the official campaign tracks.
Okay.
Just because they said they didn't have it released to mappers early enough for them to really feel good about it.
Yeah.
And so this new campaign has plastic is the new surface that was not used in a previous campaign. However, everyone's been playing on plastic forever because community made maps have had
it. I remember you talking about the one that was like just water and plastic, just people mm-hmm. making yep. courses about that because those are the brand new materials. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, so now it's official, I guess. It's campaign official.
Yeah,
so that's fun. They also have their big kind of yearly tournament starting up again, the Trekmania Grand League. And along with that, the Trekmania Grand League Open, which is kind of the anyone can join competition. And that has five ridiculously long, ridiculously difficult maps that they've put out for that everyone's practicing and then is going to race on.
Mm.
And so if I felt good about myself playing the campaign maps, I feel just as bad about myself trying to get around these professional maps.
Yeah.
And you know, watching the pro players go around it like it's nothing, and I'm like, I can't even finish a lap without crashing. So yeah, it is the best of times and the worst of times in Trekmania, but the worst of times in the best possible way. Like the Trekmania Grand League is a lot of fun to watch and to play in.
Yeah.
And that will, I think, be in a week and a half. We'll actually be playing on it for real. So
nice.
Yeah. So I tried to do something new, but went right back to my creature comforts.
Of course. I mean, Trekmania seems like a game that an audience of people who are not dissuaded by failure, it's kind of like self selects into it.
Yeah.
You know? So
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, they for whatever reason you can't see the number of attempts you've had on a map, like, and that feels like the most ill-advised thing. Like, I want to know that I've tried this map, you know, 6,000 times.
Yeah,
trying to shave off a couple seconds.
That wouldn't be discouraging. That would be evidence of your of your hard work, of your effort.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. So that is me.
Cool. Trekmania, baby. That was a really meaty grind. Mm-hmm. And I will never say meaty grind again.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you ask the nice people?
Yeah, this is top of mind because Far Cry 6 came out and the consensus in reviews seemed to be like, you know, they really botched the setting for this game. Like, it's such a rich, beautiful area, this kind of South American nation, even though the nation in the game is kind of fictionalized, that setting they could have done a lot of cool stuff with, or could have really have done justice, and they just kind of whiffed.
Yeah.
So I wanted to know what are some games that have done a really good job featuring an interesting real world, either location, group, topic, you name it.
Yeah. I'll get us started here with Ollie, who says The Saboteur is based in France during World War II and does a really good job of representing the character based on a real life driver and spy of Sean Devlin and the resistance groups of the time. If you haven't played it, highly recommend, even with the terrible Irish accent.
Yeah, I remember playing that game on Gamefly or whatever the Netflix equivalent of was games was like way back in the day.
Was that the one like where if you were in occupied, like if a section of town was still occupied, it was black and white, and when you liberated it, it was gained color?
Yeah. They took the idea from Schindler's List and were like, hey, let's
grim. let's see here. Ben, what does Greg say?
Greg says, SimCity has always done a good job of portraying what it's like to be mayor of a city with its own challenges and risks. As proof of this, there have been college classes studying the games, thesis papers done on the formulas used, and candidates for mayors for cities have been asked to play a SimCity version of the city they're running to see how they do.
That's funny, because SimCity, like any simulation, is going to be biased. by the creation of it, but like depending on what version you get, you might get Will Wright's like weird little like semi-libertarian, like both extremely taxation averse but in love with public transit. So like it, you would end up with really weird cities if it was like if people were actually making decisions based on SimCity logic.
And just like real cities, no matter how badly you do, the people don't actually have the power to vote you out of office.
Yep. Oh gosh. Let's see here, David, what does Sean say?
Sean says, Valiant Hearts really does a great job of telling a meaningful World War I story. This is all guns blazing and showcases the reality of war in such a brilliant and emotional way.
It's funny, we had no World War I games forever. And then like we got Valiant Hearts, which is a, you know, just a very beautiful adventure game, you know, based in the trenches and stuff with lots of historical detail. And then we got just infinite World War I games because of Battlefield 1. Just making it all into crazy arcade over the top action stuff.
See, the only thing I've seen from Valiant Heart is a segment where you're, you know, using your dog to like sneak into a commander's office and steal some booze.
Yeah.
And so I choose to believe this is a game just about hijinks of a man and his dog.
And just dog mash hijinks. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. I think that's what influenced Tolkien when he's writing Lord of the Rings.
Sorry, you cut out there.
I think that's what influenced Tolkien when he was writing about Lord of the Rings. Hijinks. World War One,
all the hijinks. I would not have wanted to have a Pippin in my crew, a Pippin or a Merry. That
and you know, hardtack, right?
Yeah. Oh, nary a tater to be found. Dennis, what does Roop say?
Roop says, one in three Gabriel Knight. A lot of fiction, but this, but still, the real life locations, history, and lore is there as a big part of those games.
I don't know if Roop has a specific
first and third Gabriel Knight.
Yeah. So Sins of the Fathers and then Blood of the Sacred, Blood of the Damned. I don't know if Sean or if Roop has a specific reason. Sorry, I'm distracted because my cat is biting my hand as she always does at this time of night. if Roop has a reason for leaving out two, but two does a really good job of Bavaria around Munich and stuff. And in Germany, primarily related to like the semi-mythical history of, I think, Ludwig the Fourth, something like that. Ludwig the Second. It wasn't even Ludwig. Yeah. But Gabriel Knight, if I probably would have used that if Roop didn't take it. So here we are.
Nice.
Yeah.
Swoop Roop.
Swoop Roop. Chris writes, Disco Elysium and Substance Abuse and Addiction. Can't think of another game that covers it anywhere close to that level. Yeah. No, it, like the fact that you can play it either way and that it is still a redemption story is tremendous. God, I just I love that game so much. I love a game with a heart that bleeds like that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's see, Ben, what does Rookie say?
Rookie says Assassin's Creed Black Flag makes the best use of the Caribbean Sea and Golden Age of piracy setting. I can't think of a better pirate game despite this not actually being a pirate game. Assassin's Creed Odyssey might make the best use of the setting, but it makes the most use of it. Good lord, that game is too big.
Yeah. I've heard that. And David, Casey has a response to that. That sounds that looks cogent.
Yeah, Casey adds on Assassin's Creed Origins, Odyssey, and Valhalla all added the excellent discovery mode to explore and learn about the real history of the game locations. And lastly, Assassin's Creed Unity made the news for the incredible accuracy of its Notre Dame models, which preservationists are using now to restore it.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah. I remember doing a news story around the time of the Notre Dame fire, where just like it was getting positive review bombed and nobody knew how to feel about that. Because people were genuinely like buying and playing this game to, you know, get really up close experience inside of a virtual Notre Dame cathedral and giving it good reviews because they got what they wanted out of it. which is awesome, I forget what I said back then, so nobody try and catch me as being a hypocrite, but like if you make that clear in the review, like shit, yeah, if you got what you wanted out of the thing, then yes, it succeeded, review it well. Badass. Let's see here, Dennis, what does Callum say?
Callum says, the Spider-Man games did a good enough job of mapping the skeleton of Manhattan that when I visited from New Zealand for holiday, it acted as a sort of primer that helped me navigate.
Ooh.
That is hilarious.
Mm. Yeah. That has kind of always been the case. Like, even going back to the Spider-Man 2, like on PlayStation 2 and GameCube and stuff, that also was a pretty good New York.
I want to double up on this. This one I don't think is necessarily my answer, but Grand Theft Auto 4, playing that and then visiting New York City, yeah, is like, oh, I've been here before. I've been to the Met Museum before virtually.
Yeah, like it's not called that, and it's not like geographically laid out the same, but that is absolutely what that was supposed to evoke.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. I'm going to jump in here with mine because it's appropriate. Okay. Mine is the New York expansion to... the Division 2.
Ooh, yeah.
And I kind of had the opposite experience in that from, you know, knowing walking places in Manhattan, I was able to use that to navigate the game.
Oh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, like you were able to like walk up outside of your apartment building in that,
right,
weren't
exactly.
You?
Exactly. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, that's cool. It's neat. It'd be cool to live somewhere that video games saw fit to adapt. Although a game set where I'm at would be weird.
As they did West Virginia with Fallout 76.
They did, yeah, yeah. The terrain here is less interesting than West Virginia. West Virginia is beautiful.
I should say West Virginia actually with Fallout 76 also probably ranks up there, despite everything the game did wrong. Just for all of the landmarks I didn't realize were there.
Oh, yeah?
Most notably, I think the most weird being the... I hope I'm getting this right. The Hare Krishna, like, main temple is there.
Okay.
So you just, like, are marching through, you know, Appalachia and come up over a ridge and there's a full-on, like, Hindu temple.
That rules. Huh.
Yep.
Did it have the Golden Dome in the at the Capitol?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. That's a thing, and the actual building is, you can explore it, and has one of the most funny missions there. You have to basically, since there's no people, a lot of the game is dealing with like robot bureaucracy.
Okay.
And so in order to do something, I think in order to join the military or something, you have to get a driver's license. And so you they have the whole like, defend this area for a timer, except the timer is you waiting for your number to be called at the DMV.
Oh, that's cute. Yeah. I forget who read the Spider-Man one. Was that you, Ben?
That was me.
That was you. So this will be me. David says, I always thought the version of London, including the Zeppelin level in The Order 1886, was very cool. It felt just real enough to work. I kind of want to play that game. Like, I know it got
canned for being really short, right?
Yeah, but like, that sounds kind of cool to me, actually, now.
Yeah,
you know, that you can get it real cheap, and like you can just play it in a night and see, like, maybe that game rules. I don't know.
I mean, it would be seasonally appropriate.
Yeah, yeah.
It is the London season right now.
Yes, that is, of course, what I meant.
David, what does Zach say? Round us out.
Zach says, Assassin's Creed 1. I feel like the Crusades are absolutely dying for more good games set during them.
Yeah. Assassin's Creed 1 does a good job. I mean, just Assassin's Creed gets a lot of love here, but, like, I don't know. I'll be boring and say that, like, I don't know, when Assassin's Creed 2 came out was during the time, like, when all those games came out, so all three of them roughly coincided with a different version, with, like, a different unit of art history that I took.
Oh, that's cool.
You know, so, like, the architectural styles and stuff, I was just kind of, like, just weirdly immersed in it. So it was fun going around and doing those tourist kind of things before they had an explicit tourist mode. And also, like, not a lot of games are set in Istanbul, Constantinople, depending on the time period, you know. I don't know whose business that is, but that is a cool city architecturally, and, like, the only other game that I've even seen, like, try to evoke it is Final Fantasy XII, weirdly enough, with, like, that kind of Southern Europe, Western Asia kind of, like, fusion that happens there, right there when those two lands touch. It's real cool. So yeah, Assassin's Creed Revelation, not a good game, but has a good city in it, I would say. Yeah. That'll be mine.
So, like most of the Assassin's Creeds, then.
Yes. Ben, how about you?
Fallout New Vegas is the one that comes to mind. Oh, yeah. Because, like, that's one of the examples where it elevates the things it's depicting and makes them cooler than they actually are in real life. where it's like, oh, like, such and such diner right outside of the city, or, like, the, was it Good Springs or whatever? Oh, that's an actual place. Or, like, oh, this solar array catcher that's, like, badass or whatever, that's actually exists. It's right outside the city.
Helios.
Yeah.
Nice. David, did you have one aside from Fallout 76 and Division?
No, I think those cover it.
Yeah, okay. What's your third answer, David?
Third answer. I'm wow, like, you know.
We always ask.
You only came prepared with two or something?
I didn't want to skip you. I wanted to give you a chance if you had one waiting in the wings. And Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, I feel like this is a bit of a cheat because I haven't personally played it, but I feel like Microsoft Flight Simulator makes pretty good use of, you know, Earth.
Yeah. From what I played of it, it seems neat. Real good sky in that. My version of that, like, it's much lower pressure because you just get to be a god who can scale yourself infinitely, but is taking eating some edibles and then putting on the Oculus Quest and going around in Google Earth.
Nice.
And then just, like, swooping down on, like, oh, this, I had an apartment here. Let me walk around this as God. And now I'm in the sky. Woo.
Tried to smite someone. It didn't work. I was like, oh, yeah, all right, I'm doing this again.
So there's a game that I want to, I'm going to have to track down. Maybe this will be my end boss next time. Someone made a game that is, basically Google Maps, and you can reconnect up how the roads are connected up, and it'll simulate the traffic to see if you can, like, improve on the traffic flows.
Oh, huh. Yeah. Sounds like there's a good iOS game that is kind of like that, called Freeways, where you're designing traffic interchanges. Yeah. Good question, Dennis.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, everybody, for writing in. If you would like to participate, you can go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast to watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us that are exciting to us. Dennis, what is happening over at Riot?
Silence. Hmm? Specifically, Riot has decided to remove inter-team chat from the game being League of Legends. I guess they've got multiple games right now. I have to specify.
That is weird.
This is weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's never been the case.
Yeah. So they're not straight up just like nuking it forever. They said they're gonna remove it for predetermined time and predetermined regions and look at player surveys, yada yada, to see if it works. Mm-hmm. Which is a good way to go about it.
Yeah.
But basically, they've determined something that we've all intuitively known forever, which is more kind of toxicity and abuse goes through slash all chat, mm-hmm, than anything productive. And while there are moments of camaraderie or the GLHFs of the world, primarily it's just used for far more nefarious things. I think it's a good thing. I'm glad they're trying things. Although I strongly agree with the general reaction of the community, which is there is way more abuse that goes through intra team chat.
Chat,
if you're winning, usually more people will be benevolent or whatever. If you're losing, you tend to be more likely to pick on people. And in my experience, you're more likely to pick on the people that you fault for losing.
Which
tends to be anyone other than yourself.
Right.
So I've seen much more toxicity in the team chat. I think most people, judging by the general reaction, were like, why? If you're going to nuke something, nuke team chat. That's where most of the nasty stuff goes. But
yeah,
that's directly in conflict with this being kind of a team game.
Right.
And as good as their ping systems are, they don't want to completely take out chat.
Yeah. No, this is...
So we'll see how it goes.
Why don't they just ban the people that are assholes?
They've tried a bunch of different ways to try and get around that. Outside of like outright banning and doing things like they have stepped on a couple of rakes, like, all right, let's mark this player as toxic so people know, but then that became a badge of honor. I got canceled. I tell the truth, blah, blah.
Well, and some of the most famous streamers made their reputation on, I get banned, create a new account and play until I get banned again.
Yeah,
so there's, the toxic people who get banned are oftentimes, unless they're going to IP ban them, which is, take a while to get there. There are lots of workarounds.
Yeah. No, this is not surprising given that like their previous biggest drop in toxic behavior, at least as of the last time I had knowledge of this. And I know that team works really, really hard, but the previous biggest drop was making it so that all chat was opt in.
Yes. It's turned off by default. Now it's turned off for everyone.
Yeah. Which, they're always testing stuff, and you gotta roll it out and test it at scale to see if it works. So
can I share a brief aside here?
Yes.
In our Magic Arena, they added animated emotes that people can say, and it just made the gameplay much more toxic. Because there's like one with like somebody like saying like being bored or sleepy or something like that, and people just spam that, and it's just like, dude, I'm thinking,
just
like,
trying to psych you out. Yeah, that sucks.
On the flip side, Storybook Brawl, there's two different emotes you can have in the base game, which is a happy dwarf or a comically angry dwarf. And it's like, so like happy, like you give the happy emote, whether you win or lose to the other player, and they like salute you back. It's great.
Yay. Oh, that's great. Yeah. My story, this is real quick. This is just a thing is happening. I didn't realize they were doing this. There's going to be a new upgraded version of Corpse Party released for PC here on October the 20th. This is specifically a localized edition of an update that happened over in Japan earlier this year in 2021. I am curious to see how this goes. My last understanding was any of the remakes of the original had worse voice acting and worse character portrait design kind of stuff compared to the original, like the one that you would see on the PlayStation Portable. So I am curious about it, but seeing as Corpse Party is a game that I have enjoyed in the past, I was interested to see that they are bringing out a new version. Yeah.
That's cool.
Ben,
'tis the season for it.
It is.
Yeah.
Ben, what's Rockstar up to?
So there were some like leaks over the past couple weeks, like Reddit, there were posts of like upgraded character models of the Grand Theft Auto games, like speculating that they were going to make remakes. Rockstar has come out and confirmed that they're going to make a Grand Theft Auto the Definitive Edition, which is all three of their Grand Theft Auto 3 games with upgraded graphics and quote-unquote upgraded game mechanics, I believe. Gameplay enhancements. Modern gameplay enhancements.
Yeah.
Just say microtransactions, you jerks.
It could be that.
it could be like functional aiming systems. Yeah.
I'm already like, well, anyway, so this is going to come out sometime in 2021. It's apparently going to come out on iOS and Android in 2022, which I don't think that's needed, but okay, sure.
They've done that before. There have been versions of Vice City on iOS in the past. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Whatever. Yeah, so I'm interested to see how they fuck it up, you know, like, because those are like pretty good perfect games, and so like any sort of change to it's probably gonna ruin it, but
yeah
we'll see how it goes. I mean, I'll probably pick it up and play it just to play Vice City and see what it's like.
They are weirdly difficult to get to run well on modern systems, especially to get to run well looking like not ass. So making it easy to just launch it and have it be acceptable looking will be a big deal. David, what are they what is Wizards up to, and why are they doing it in the worst D&D setting?
So Wizards of the Coast has apparently released some playtest material for new races, which includes four races from the greatest campaign setting ever conceived, Spelljammer.
It's so dorky.
With the name like Spelljammer, go it's, on, please.
It's about wooden ships that fly through space.
What if wizards in space except on pirate ships?
Yeah. They managed to make beholders lame. I don't mean to, if you like Spelljammer, I don't mean to take a shit on it.
Yeah.
I thought for a second you were talking about Windjammers and I was excited, but this is something else.
I mean, they are Windjammers just in space.
Yeah. Solar Windjammers. Yeah.
But I mean, the saying's known for it has a lot of emphasis on more like cosmic enemies and races and situations. So there's like asteroid beholders and stuff like that. It's a really cool setting that hasn't been officially developed for a long time.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So hopefully this means it will be.
Yeah.
This thumbnail looks straight out of like late 70s, early 80s. Like
oh yeah.
Yep.
Acid-induced sci-fi.
What part of Wizard Pirates in Space was unclear?
I mean, I love me some camp. Like, if they lean into that, I'm happy.
Yeah, yeah. There is that going on. Hey guys, we need to cut it out. So how do you feel about buttoning it up?
Cut it out, button it up.
Yeah. We will keep the admin short. You know how to help us if you can help us. Let's see here. Yeah, all of the usual things: ratings, reviews, Patreon, social media, telling your friends, etc. And down the line, is there anything big that I'm forgetting?
Watch Halloween streams on Hexcrank because they'll be extra spooky.
Yeah, they will be it's the one weekend when it's appropriate. Oh man, cool. Well, I've been Cole Ross. You can find me on Twitter at Cole Ross.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me on Twitter at Deck of Wonders with underscores between the words.
I've been being David.
I've been Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles. Who has titles?
I have two.
Okay.
They're not maybe very good. I don't know. So I have Wormlight.
Okay.
And Meaty Grind.
Okay.
I have two, neither of which are going to be usable. I have These Are My Fucking Eyes. and I have The Best of Times, The Worst of Times, but the worst in the best possible way.
That's a paragraph.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I have one. I have An Even Ludwig.
Yep, I've got that too.
Okay.
I also had Maslow's Hierarchy of Injuries and Doom Rolling for Lordy. I like An Even Ludwig. Ludwig.
The one that got the laugh was A Meaty Grind. I like that.
We did say we're never gonna let you forget saying it.
Yeah. I just going I back
to it.
Yeah,
when it eventually wins the toady.
it was very true about this episode. So.
Yes, yeah. True. I'd going by the reaction as opposed to the votes. Is there any? Is there any objection?
Nope.
Okay. Have a safe trip to your doctor's visit, Ben.
Yeah.
All right. Mm-hmm. Peace, everyone.
Yeah, good luck, man.
Bye,
see you guys.
Bye, Ruby.